count rarely the popular wizards. We haven't all been condemned to spend the rest of our spoonerisms talking in lives. This is episode 15 of the Tux Radar podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
And in this podcast, we're covering a fantastic column in the Linux Kernel, Dell's netbook sales and their returns, more importantly. We're going to report back on our experiences with KDE 4/3.5, if you're Andrew, and our open ballot. Should open source licenses be viral? Remember, we publish news, features, and more on tuxradar.com, so bookmark it today.
This is the news. The biggest story over the last few days is the discovery by the Google security team, of all people, of a rather gaping hole in the Linux kernel. This is for 2.4 and 2.6, so it dates back for 8 years.
8 years.
8 whole years. And it's about an uninitialized function pointer for the programmers amongst us. And so, should we all be terrified?
What is a hole?
A hole.
Can you see through it? don't laugh.
Oh, sorry. No. We're not allowed to laugh.
Oh, that's true. By the way, we've had some complaints. We laugh too much.
Yeah.
We sincerely apologise for all the laughter and all the banging on the table particularly. It's now been replaced with sounds of Andrew Gregory eating his lunch.
As you get. Feels good, man. Yeah. It's a security vulnerability, I should clarify, which means that you can own a Linux box. Are you surprised by this?
I own a couple of Linux boxes, so.
I mean,
in fact, my other Linux box is your Linux box.
Oh, no. I wondered where that Hoodzilla account came from. But yes, it's, you know, these things are inevitable. It gives the Linux haters ammunition. Oh, Linux isn't perfect, whatever. But it was patched very quickly. I think Linus had a patch without.
It's pretty serious, isn't it? I think the problem is that a local user can now get root privileges mm-hmm. with this particular hole. And it's been in there the last 8 years, and no one's noticed, to be fair, so it's not terrible. We haven't been
well,
seeing
we hoped. We hope not.
Google's actually being run from the Kremlin.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. These things are inevitable.
At least it's not a remote exploit, is it? You can't do it remotely. You have an account, don't you?
You have to be able to run code explicitly on the local machine. So.
That doesn't sound too bad. I mean, if it's avoided being exploited so far, then it must be pretty obscure. What were Google doing anyway, poking around looking for holes?
They're pretty serious, aren't they? There was a couple of researchers there at Google who found it.
Was it like an automated kind of analysis of the source code? Or
I don't think so. No, I think they were just...
What they found was the function that was being used wasn't doing what it was supposed to do very well. So it looked like it was working. They thought, okay, this is secure, but it was just a bit of a syntactic sugar, basically. It wasn't actually doing anything at all.
Yeah.
So that's why it laid undiscovered quite so long.
I find it incredible, really, that there aren't more exploits like that. I mean, considering the millions of lines of code and the fact that it's all kind of constructed in what seems to be a fairly ad hoc manner.
There could be many more exploits like that, couldn't there?
Yeah.
We just don't know about
it. Perhaps this is the start of a flood of...
The
beginning of the end. Moving on, Dell has been speaking out this week about Linux on netbooks. There's been a lot of hoo-ha with people saying, oh, there's so many Linux returns for netbooks. But Dell says the Linux return rates for their netbooks are the same as for Windows. So they say it is a non-issue. And they've also announced that almost a third of their netbook sales are machines running Linux.
That's very reassuring.
It's great, isn't it?
What distro do Dell netbooks sell?
Ubuntu.
They
ship with Ubuntu, yeah.
So it's not that people are looking at Xandros or...
Linpus Lite, yeah.
Well, they were previously, weren't they? Back when the first complaints came about, was it ASUS? And they were shipping, you know, non-interesting Linuxes.
It was a dated Xandros,
yeah.
Paul, do people buying Dell equipment got to specify Linux? Have they got to do that explicitly?
Not the last time I checked. If you go to the Dell site and order a netbook, choose the cheapest netbook, it's just with Linux.
It's not like walking into PC World and picking up a netbook and finding it's Linux when you get home.
No. It says that, you know.
Yeah. It says Linux. Microsoft operating system. Ubuntu 9.
we've seen that before.
Sorry, stop laughing, Mike.
Sorry. Mike. Let's all talk about sad things like rabbits dying.
Rabbits dying.
Little dead rabbits. Anyway.
Oh, Graham.
We can't help laughing. We are very, very sorry, listeners.
Everyone post negative comments.
Yes. It's making us all very sad.
There's too much bass. You bang the table too much.
You know
good
what?
Grief.
I think next time there won't be a podcast at all.
You're right.
No, we'll just keep it to ourselves.
We'll record it and listen to it for our own pleasure.
Send it to my mum.
And other news, well, this isn't really news because Ubuntu One, Canonical's file sharing service, launched in May. It's still in beta, but I tried it for the first time today.
What, you downloaded a few movies with it?
there's a free account which gives you 2 gigabytes of space, and then there's a $10 per month account which gives you 10 gigabytes of space. I was hoping for, you know, some really funky wacky integration into Ubuntu, but after installing it you just get this strange program that doesn't work most of the time, but when it does it opens up a Firefox window. And then you browse to this web interface where you can upload files.
So what I don't quite get is, why is it $10 a month for the 10 gigabyte account? Because Apple have been having this Mobile Me for quite a while, and you get an obscene amount of storage, just gigabytes and gigabytes, and you get family accounts, you get contacts, calendars, push email, you get
Find My iPhone,
you get a lot of stuff with Mobile Me. It's not a great value still, but you get a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And on Ubuntu One, you get some space.
Just
on
some
a
space.
Server somewhere.
Yeah. Just upload some files, and that's it. So
it's like a way of synchronizing documents across many
it's
machines.
It's Dropbox, basically. You just drop files on a server somewhere, share them with other people and stuff.
So it's like the drafts folder in Google Mail.
Yes.
how much space does Google Mail have at the moment?
7 gigs?
Seven, eight gigs. It's always climbing.
And is that $10 a month?
No. But it's a bit harder to use that to share files, but because you've got a limited
DFS
attachment.
DFS is broken. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, can't you just share one Google Mail account?
You could do. Yeah.
Attach file savers draft, like Graham was saying. Not that I do it myself, of course.
No.
But you've got a 10 megabyte attachment limit there. So whereas with this 2 gigabyte free space, you could put up
a movie or two,
a movie or two, or an operating system or two. Yes.
It sounds like it needs more work.
It sounds like it needs
some work.
Yeah. It is in beta, so you know we shouldn't be too critical of them.
Excuses it. It's in beta.
Well,
wasn't Gmail in beta until recently?
True, and that worked very well. But I think you raise a good point on the pricing. It's just
the pricing's terrible. The desktop thing you tried was terrible.
Yeah,
what's the point? And the thing is, this is one of the big features in Karmic Koala 9.
It is, isn't it?
This is why it's interesting, because the alphas are now coming with Ubuntu One as standard.
Yeah,
this is ringing a bell. Doesn't Mandriva offer something like this?
No, Mandriva One is their live distro.
No, not just the name.
Oh,
Mandriva One. I mean,
his knowledge goes much deeper than that.
they have some sort of online thing, like a Dropbox thing.
Right.
I'm fairly sure.
You think of Ultio?
No, I'm not. I don't know what I'm thinking of now. That panini was really nice.
He's thinking of Slackware.
Go back to thinking of dying bunnies.
God.
So it really does nothing. There's no bookmarks. There's no email. There's no
it's just file sharing. Maybe they're going to expand it so that you've got this whole cloud.
But it's file sharing whereby when you make any changes, the page doesn't refresh, which is very irritating because it's all kind of Ajax-y.
Yes, it was all very slow. I had to keep reloading the window. So, meh.
It's now time for our hot topic, which this fortnight is KDE 3.4. You may remember last fortnight.
Or
4.3. 3.4? Whatever.
Spoonerism's still
on. You may remember last fortnight. We all made a bold pledge to switch to KDE, apart from Graham, who's already using KDE.
Well done, Graham.
Yeah, thank you.
And report back, find out, you know, how we as non-KDE users got on with it.
But since then we changed the plan, haven't we?
Have we?
Yeah, we're not planning to report back anymore. We're just planning to beat up Graham.
Can I beat up Mike?
Why?
Because Mike's smaller. Yeah. And spindly.
Just for the laugh.
Mike's smaller and spindly. I'm a little bit hungover. You know, I think Graham was just giving it too much difficulty today.
Don't worry.
Mike, how did you get on with KDE?
I did not have a very good time. On my machine with an Intel graphics card, everything, there was glitches. Bringing up the Plasma dashboard, the screen went white and flickering. Lots of little lags. I understand that it's... I was using 4.2, by the way, and I understand it's a bit faster in 4.3. But the thing that made me ultra-rage...
You don't have to look at me. I'm not responsible for it.
Mike is looking at Graham, almost accusing me.
Aaron Sago sat right over there.
Graham is a KDE developer.
The thing that really, really made me rage was the key bindings. I always have like Control Alt and T to start up a terminal, Control Alt F for Firefox. I tried to find out how to do this in KDE. In system settings under computer administration, there's something called keyboard and mouse, which then has keyboard, standard keyboard shortcuts, or global keyboard shortcuts. Then I go into global, and then there's KD components, KWin, KMix, KHotkeys. The last one of that tells me that I can remap Control and W to Control and F4 in Qt Designer. And there's one for the terminal, but it won't work and you can't change it. Then there's input actions, which lets me disable or enable print screen and K-menu edit, but nothing else there. So I found out after a long period of time that you had to assign them in the menu editor, which is rubbish.
You had to assign keyboard shortcuts in the menu editor.
Yes.
Nice.
And also, if you changed any parameters for the commands, it changed them in the menu as well. So if you wanted a custom key binding to open a terminal with a certain path, you had to have two entries in the menu.
So
that's, for, I suppose, a power user desktop, I think that's pants.
Paul, you also used KDE 4, didn't you?
I did. I used 4.2 again, because that's what comes with Ubuntu. Well, Ubuntu now. Yes. I did like some things. I really liked the I'm feeling lucky search option in Conqueror, because I want that in Firefox. I like the Google search box. I want to type things and hit enter and it searches. But let's say I hit control enter or shift enter or alt enter, something else. I'd love it if it changed to an alternate Google, like Google I'm feeling lucky. Mm. The things I know I hope the was going to find the right one, I trust in Google or whatever, and it should just do it. So that was quite nice.
Apart from the fact that you don't want to be forced to use Conqueror as your web browser.
Conqueror, it was good. I didn't like the way that if you drag tabs, it copies them.
It creates a duplicate.
You can't move it. It doesn't move. It just copies it. So it duplicates it, which is a bit silly. I didn't quite get that. I didn't really get the activities. You know, when you click zoom out in the plasmoids, you get like an extra virtual desktop. What's that about, Graham? Why does that exist?
I guess it's like meta virtual desktops. So it's a virtual desktop for virtual desktops. So you could have a work activity, and you zoom into that work activity. You have four desktops. You can put all of your spreadsheets and presentations on there, and you can have a games activity where you have K-Golf or whatever, X-Bill running, and you could switch between activities. Like you would virtual desktops, but it's the whole lot. It includes the background, the themes.
That's a great feature.
It could be cool. The fact is it's tied into the really slow update so that when you zoom out to those activities, at least on my machine, and probably never got around to doing it on yours, but...
I tried and it was also slower.
You don't use it?
I don't use it, no.
Didn't you describe it as one of KDE's best and most hidden features?
Yeah, well, I do think it's a good idea. But, you know, I don't play that many games at the office, at least KD ones, because they're all crap.
Yes, you do. You play that Monopoly deal game all day.
On a real table. I think it's a nice idea. I think it needs more work.
I like the little kicker thing, whatever they call it nowadays.
K-Runner?
No, the kicker thing, the bit, the bar across the bottom.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the panel now.
The panel. I like the way it's massively over-engineered, but you click a button, you can, like, scale it freely, and everything resizes to fit. And if you pull it to a certain size, the little K button becomes a whole K menu. You're never going to use that. And obviously, you're thinking that means all that code sitting in my RAM, wasting time, even when it's a little tiny button that's sitting there prepared to leap into action as a full K menu at any second's notice.
Yeah.
But I like the idea. It's very well engineered. But there are lots of things I didn't like. Like in Conqueror, I'm used to pressing Control Enter to complete URLs to add www.com. Doesn't do that. It just goes to something random on mine. It goes to I miss the fuzzy clock as a distinct option. That's a plasmoid now, sadly. It's slightly annoying. Installing it on Ubuntu broke my GNOME. It said the user switch is now broken when I switch it back to GNOME. And not really KDE's fault, but I blame KDE anyway.
Yeah, I got that.
Gmail tells me to use a fully supported browser.
Yeah, KHTML.
And... why is there a desktop folder plasmoid by default on Ubuntu? Isn't that basically the admission that everyone wants desktop, really?
Yeah, I think so. I think most distributions do that. Is it OpenSUSE that has the complete desktop
desktop plasmoid.
So you don't even know the plasmoid's there. You just have the pretend icons right on the back.
Yeah.
But it's all right, but as you say, it's kind of admitted. What's the point in that level of abstraction?
Yeah. And there's also that thing I showed you with I added the recycle bin plasmoid. And when I dragged the file over it, the plasmoid, the trash can moved to the side to make space for the file. I'm trying to drop the file in the trash can. Go on, go away, file.
If you'd locked the desktop, it would have been off.
Yeah, discovered. Basically, KDE made me feel very stupid, like I'm using it wrong the entire time. That's what it felt like. Which wasn't a very pleasant experience. But it has got I'm Feeling Lucky search, which is something, something Firefox could learn from, quite frankly.
Is that the best you two could do, then? I was expecting much worse than that.
No, that's enough for me. That makes it unusable for me.
We'll just try and leave space for Gregory to complain.
Well, I don't have that many complaints, and that's because I accidentally installed KDE 3.5.
The good version.
And found that it just worked. You know, it's the startup noise is much nicer than the startup noise in GNOME. It's,
really?
Such an important feature to have.
Well, it's the first thing that I noticed because I started up.
Did it play without any glitches in playback? Because I often find, because it's blending those icons on the screen.
Yeah, it was so cool. It was really, really cool. The three things.
Spanish Inquisition!
Conqueror kept asking me if I wanted to accept a cookie or something. I don't know what that's all about, but surely this is security that can be enabled in a menu somewhere rather than just being thrust upon you by default.
Couldn't you click on Always Allow?
I could. I'd prefer to ignore it and get frustrated, though.
Yeah.
And the other thing is Dolphin, KDE 3.0. It was a late version of 3.5 that I was using, and it had Dolphin as the file manager as well as Conqueror. And it wastes so much screen space. It's ridiculous. Mm. There's all this stuff, all these choices available to you, which should really be hidden in a right-click, context-sensitive menu. It's there in front of you.
You see, Graham, you see what it does to people.
It turns him into this.
All wrong. I'm drawing a diagram. I'm not going to draw a diagram. You can't see. It's a podcast. It's about one third of the Dolphin window was devoted to showing my files. That meant that not all of my files could be shown within this window, and you had to drag a scrolly thing around or resize the window to see all of the files. There were only three files in there. A huge amount of the panel space was taken up with, do you want to open this as an archive? Do you want to open this as root? Do you want to put this in the trash? No, I don't. I just want to see the files, first of all.
Do you want the same icon blur up to 128 by 128 pixels on the right?
Quite clearly, no. But apart from that, it's just like GNOME with the big button at the bottom left rather than at the top left.
Wow. Profound
well,
indeed.
Hello.
Well, in defence, expecting this onslaught against KDE, I constructed a list of the 10 things I like about KDE.
Wow.
That only goes up to 3.
Firstly, it's the KDE applications. I think that's the reason for using the desktop. I haven't listed that.
Conqueror.
But look, Contact, Copete, Kedit, K3B, Amarok, Console, KRDB, they're all applications that I choose to use over anything else. And it's not because of the KDE desktop, it's because I think they're the best. And it just makes more sense to run them in the KDE environment.
Console is the best.
Yeah, I think so.
Is it?
Yeah, I really like it.
It did give me a massive brain speed bump when I pressed Control-Alt-T to open a new terminal tab. And it split it into two panes, the same thing in two panes.
Hey, that's nice.
Why would you ever want that?
I have used that before.
Two panes of the same terminal.
Oh, it's the same terminal.
Yeah, I see.
It was a mirror of the terminal.
Well, it's just you can split the tabs to panes, which is silly. I want a new terminal tab.
Yeah. But you could do the tail of a log file in one and then do something in the other.
Yeah, that's it, Graham. Well done.
Okay, I like the crystal desktop theme and I like the oxygen icons. That's my second reason. I think the configurability is important. I like Conqueror. I like the browser shortcuts. Initially, I started using KDE because I like the API. I like the panel. It's more configurable than the KDE one. I like the iCandy, the wobbly windows, the desktop cube. I like the whole desktop experience. I like the fact that Gwenview loads when you see an image preview and you can skip between images in the same directory. I like Plasma. I think it's got a lot of potential. I like KWallet. And I like the global mouse gesture control that's made it back into 4.3.
Ah, I haven't used that.
There you go. In that's why I use KDE.
That's a spirited and passionate defence in list form.
Yes, in list form. Because I've just been sat there this morning thinking, why do I use KDE? Because I think you're right in everything you said.
And a lot of it is becoming familiar with a new system when you have to ask yourself why. What are the advantages to it? And that's what I think are the advantages to KDE.
So you surf the web with Conqueror?
I do. I have Firefox open and Chrome and Conqueror. And if I'm happen to be working with Conqueror, I'll type GG colon into the search bar and search for something that way. But probably only about 30% of the time will I use Conqueror.
And K-word?
I don't use K-word.
K-spread?
No, I don't have any need for a spreadsheet.
K, all the rest of the office suites, I can't remember.
No, I think K-office is a big disappointment at the moment, apart from Critter, which is great.
So you use OO?
Yeah, I do. Abbey Word and OO.
It sounds like you use the KDE utilities more than anything else. Like
yeah, I mean, K-syscard is fantastic if you're interested in monitoring computers and things like that.
I did try Amarok, and it confused me because of that strange virtual desktop inside virtual desktop.
Yeah.
So you've got activities, then you've got virtual desktops, and now you've got KDE Amarok desktop.
They're plasmoids.
Things. Are they? Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
It confused the heck out of me. I didn't know what was going on.
The fact is, it's got tons of features, but I think the Amarok GUI design is awful. I use it because it does what I want it to do.
And music. I find it. As do many other music players.
Yeah, but I like the integration with the online music stores, and just the simple file view of my music is the same as it is in the file manager. I like that. But yeah, I think the new GUI is pretty awful. I think there's miles and miles of miles of room for improvement. You know, 4.3 isn't that big a difference, and it's a bit of a disappointment, really. But I still choose to use KDE.
When you said that KDE made you feel stupid, it made me think of a quote by somebody who was at a dinner party hosted by Buckingham Palace, said that she was talking to Benjamin Disraeli. She said, after talking to Disraeli, I was convinced that he was the most intelligent person in the world. And after talking to Gladstone, I was convinced that I was the most intelligent person in the world. The moment has passed for that really to be relevant, but no. I thought I'd...
we can cut that back
in. Chuck it in there. Sound clever. Also, maybe you could check that I've got it the right way round. I think it was Lady Astor, but you know, if it's wrong, maybe you could run it through Audacity.
The Audacity truth filter.
Yeah.
Correct everything. So, well, we did that then. Should we do another challenge?
I think we should.
Any what? Ideas?
But so, something involves Graham Payne too, I think.
Yeah.
Graham got a flighty this time.
Yeah,
that's true.
What could be even harder than using KDE for 2 weeks?
How about we all restrict ourselves to the command line?
What?
Purely, what? No X server. No graphical apps. No X server. No nothing.
No
text consoles.
X server, just text consoles, yeah.
Sounds like fun.
Unless it gets directly in the way of your job, temporarily you can switch to X.
Well, we do make a Linux magazine, so yes. If we have to take screenshots of something, then...
Correct. So if it gets in the way of your job, fair enough. Okay. Temporary switch to X, then back to terminal as soon as possible.
Right.
Agreed?
Okay, agreed. But how long do we have to do this for?
As long as possible. The person that does it most gets a cookie.
Yeah. Is there a text version of InDesign?
Okay.
Awesome, we'll do that. Or die trying. And with such suicidal packs, we come to the halfway point in our podcast. Still to come, our ballot of the week and our open discovery.
Okay, it's time for discovery of the fortnight. Now, shall I go first?
Why not?
Yeah, well...
That sounds jolly decent of you.
I've been really arrogant of you to say.
I've been trying to spread a little KDE love this week.
Okay.
So I spent the rest of the morning that I wasn't making a list of 10 things. looking for a KDE application that I hadn't used before. And I came across one called Basket. Now, the K is capitalised, which is very annoying. But otherwise... It's a brilliant note-taking utility.
The V and the A in very annoying were also capitalised, by the way.
No, the K in annoying was capitalised. It's a note-taking application. Par excellence, I've not seen one like it before. It's like a whiteboard. You just click in the window and it makes a note. You can drop images, you can drop URLs, you can import your K notes. You can link notes together, you can organise them into columns, you can filter them. You can export them, and it minimizes to the system tray.
Does it work on like GNOME?
Yeah, it will.
Cool.
And it's the best note-taking application I've ever seen, and I use Knotes.
Does it work under a terminal-only Linux?
No, but probably if it's running in the background, I can add notes through dcop or something and retrieve them. That's my pick of the fortnight. It's a really good note-taking application, and it's worth taking a look.
Didn't Sounds that good. Win our roundup? Or come close to winning?
The name rings a bell.
Basket, yeah. I think we had a group test of these things. I think it did very well, if not win.
I'd never used it before.
Oh.
Yeah, so I think I wrote that roundup for a long time.
Who won, Mike?
Can't remember.
So, Who wants to go next?
Can I go next? Because I've got to go back into my training in about 5 minutes.
Of course, Andrew.
Oh, God, what have I found this fortnight? Yes, that's it. DOS, it's not really a discovery. It's more of a gripe. But bear with me. I installed DOSBox to get a bit of Elite 2 Frontier action.
Excellent, that man.
They've changed something. The Ubuntu people have changed something in some update which affects the key mapping. So when you get to the controls of your Eagle Mark II, mm-hmm. the arrow keys don't work, which is essential for navigating. Well, you need arrow keys really. I googled around for a fix and found that you need to add a line to DOSBox.conf. I looked everywhere for DOSBox.conf, couldn't find it.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out you need to create DOSBox.conf. So I created a file, called it DOSBox.conf, typed the lines into the thing, and it still wouldn't work. And I spent ages and ages and ages searching, looking on all these forums, and one of the developers of DOSBox was saying, oh, it's easy, you just need to add this line to DOSBox.conf. And nowhere did he mention that you need to create DOSBox.conf in DOSBox rather than creating it in Linux.
I see. There's an option in DOSBox to set up a default config file.
So DOSBox is an emulator, but it's also a Linux application.
Yeah.
But you don't create the config file in Linux, you create it in DOSBox.
You don't create it by hand. You don't open up a text editor.
It's a file stored in DOSBox, presumably, somewhere.
So you're not actually creating it on your file system, you're unlocking it somehow.
Yeah, that's weird.
Sounds like it, yeah.
I think I found 3 or 4 forums where this developer chap here had said, oh, you just need to add this line to DOSBox.conf. I was looking around and sort of somewhere scrolled away, just in the very furthest corner of the internet, he mentioned that you have to make it yourself. And it made me so frustrated because he could just have said that in the first place.
Mm.
On the DOSBox forum, on the Ubuntu forum, the place where most people had gone to find this out on, wherever it was, retrogames.com or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he'd kept this information back and then just oh.
You must have been so peeved. You must have flown up to like a lathe and started blasting at the cops coming out.
I did. I got up to mostly harmless.
Mostly harmless.
In
your rage.
In the space of an afternoon. Anyway, that's it. That's my discovery, just a general discovery of rage. But also, it's a salutary lesson, because if I'd just read readme.txt, I'd have found that first.
There we go.
You always miss readme.txts when you install through packages, though, don't you?
That's true. It's in like user share doc somewhere out of the way.
Cool. Thanks, Andrew.
And before I go, should open source licenses be viral? No.
Simple and to the point.
Bye, Andrew.
Now,
that leaves Paul
and me
and Mike.
Yeah,
that doesn't leave Paul.
You don't really count.
That leaves you two. Who wants to go first?
Me first.
Let Paul go first.
Paul, it looks like Mike's still thinking about his.
I've got two, like usual. The first one's completely random, but I just think it's very interesting. It is called Munchausen by Internet. And this is very strange. It's a condition which I think we've all heard of or thought about, but it's got a name.
Seen the movie?
Yeah, Baron von Munchausen, named after him because of his great exploits. It's the name for people who fabricate a problem in their lives, disease, whatever, and then go onto online support forums and get sympathy for it.
Ah. I forgot the password. My disk.
No, that's much bigger than that. No, it gives Wikipedia page is really impressive because it gives so many examples and describes what happens as a result. So it talks about people, a lady who said, "Oh yeah, I had a baby born prematurely." She goes into a premature birth thing where people are having a really hard time.
Yes,
dealing with the problems they have. You know, people actually have children die.
Well, that's quite serious.
I know, but she goes on saying she's not trolling. She's not trying to destroy them, but she just needs attention, sympathy, something.
Yeah, yeah.
So she goes on there to try and attract discussion, and it talks about what happens when people get revealed. It has a massive split in the community. The trust disappears and stuff. It's a really good page and really worth reading. I'd recommend reading the Munchausen by Internet page on Wikipedia. So read it. It's good. The real one, and this is a
This is a shocker. Someone emailed me this, and I just never realised this. This is testvm.openclipart.org/cchost. This is the beta version of OpenClipart.
Well, as if the alpha version wasn't good enough.
And it's really good. It does everything OpenClipart should do. You can see pictures for every single picture.
You can actually see the pictures
properly.
When you do
a search result, it doesn't tell you what usernames are there. It shows you things with ratings, with star ratings, with categories, with tagging, with previews, with... It's incredible. It's really, really good. And you can click a button at the front page and download the latest files straight away. There's like a site pick of the week and stuff. It's what OpenClipart should have been from day one.
That is exactly what it should have been about. We've raged about it before on here, haven't we?
Yeah.
And so who got in touch? Was it one of the developers, one of the site owners?
No. Some guy who reads TuxRadar wrote in to say he'd made a little application using Gloss, my awesome Python OpenGL library.
Oh, yeah.
Plug. By the way, OpenClipart. And I'm like, oh.
Well, he wrote it.
He just pointed the URL out.
Right.
I was very
impressed.
It's
a crazy URL. Why is it sitting behind that kind
because
of obscurity?
I guess they're still testing or something like that. I'm not sure. But it's really, really good. Definitely check this URL out. They should flick the switch and make that live straight away, because even if it's buggy, it's
got to be better.
It's just
then
better than the current version. You know? Yeah. It's just better. So check it out. It's so good. It looks nicer too. The design's nicer. I want to be annoyed that it's not the real version yet, but at the same time, I'm just so amazed that it actually does everything I always wanted OpenClipart to do in the first place.
So now they just have to fix that Open Fonts website.
Yeah,
as well,
I presume that if there is a shared code base, they'll just say, hey, here's new code,
yeah,
upgrade, it'll just work.
Have you tried the same URL?
What, testvm?
Just replace,
OpenClipart.
Yeah.
No, I haven't. No, it's a good idea, though. So yeah, OpenClipart in not crap shocker.
Excellent.
That just leaves no one, eh?
This is a discovery which will be of use to people who don't use KDE or GNOME, but who use an alternative window manager.
Emacs.
Screen.
Rat poison.
If you are using Rat Poison or Window Maker or TWM or IceWM and you start up OpenOffice.org, you'll notice that it looks like ass because it uses OpenOffice's built-in widget theme. This really strange toolkit.
Oh, SWT? No, that's Java.
VCL or VCL, SAL, right. Yeah. One of those
SAL,
things.
That,
SAL,
yeah.
Yeah. And it looks horrible. It looks really weird. Everything's out of proportion and because it's using this inbuilt widget set. But you can force it to use GTK or KDE with an environment variable. So, you know, I was using WindowMaker for a bit and wanted to change it, and I found out that if you use this environment variable, the link where you can find it will be in the podcast notes, sal_use_vclplugin=GTK or KDE before running the suite, then it'll pop up with a nice GTK or Qt interface and fit in well with the rest of your GTK or Qt apps. It looks infinitely better.
This leads to a very relevant question.
Mm-hmm.
This is Discovery of the Fortnite.
Yeah.
And you've been using KDE for the last fortnight.
I will admit, I spent...
So how did you possibly manage to use WindowMaker?
Hi, Graham. How's it going?
And now onto the final section for our podcast, the one so interesting Andrew Gregory has run off back to training to learn how to be a manager. It is our open ballot. The question is, should open source licenses be viral? By which we mean, should they be self-spreading as opposed to make you all sniffly and give you red eye? Lads, what do you think?
Well, I use the BSD license for my code, so you know, I'm just happy. If the code's being used, I don't think it needs to spread.
Are you happy though, Mike?
I'm working on it, yeah.
Didn't you say that someone forked macOS a few months ago and changed nothing but the name and you didn't like it? Cause
No, that's happened a couple of times, yeah. No, I've never had any objection about that. I've had objection where people claim they completely represent the macOS project by just forking the code. But no, you know, I'm fine. I write code for the love of writing code. And
do you think Linux would have been as successful as it is without that kind of safeguard that people who made changes to it?
Well, I don't see it as a safeguard, because people say, well, like with the BSD license, you can steal code, but you can't, because the code is always there.
But not safeguard, but a way of making people contribute.
Yes, I think that that helped with people knowing that their code would forever
Well, the code is there with BSD, but you don't have to give it back to the people, do you? And this is where the Unix wars kicked off.
Mm.
You know, IBM could release an improvement for IBM servers, which makes their version of Linux better.
Yeah.
But under the GPL, they're required to give it back. And that is a nice commitment to make. They're saying, listen, we agreed to give this code back. We're not going to try and fork it because we can't improve it because it just goes back.
Absolutely, yes.
My guess is that most companies, given the choice, not really because of any sense of badness, but really because it takes extra effort and extra expenses, that they'll probably just sit in their changes if it wasn't for that kind of viral capacity in the license.
Yeah, of course, because people will write manky code.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they'll,
yeah,
they'll put other partners' code in just as you know.
Yes, if they don't have to worry about it, of course.
Yeah. Or it's not commented. They don't want to answer questions about it because it takes too much time. There are a lot of issues. Whereas if from the off you're saying, listen, we agreed to give our changes back, that's quite a big commitment to make, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But is that only for the kernel, though? Do we really care about everything else?
End user applications?
Well, smaller stuff. I mean, anything big, like 000.
Yeah.
Even though that's not exactly a lightning development pace.
I don't think that's had the effect.
No, but at least it means that if someone contributes to it that isn't Sun... Well, actually, OO is a bad example. You have to sign all sorts of silly agreements to contribute to OO.
Well, there's parts of it under the CDDL or something.
It's signed agreements to take part, I think. Really? Anyway, generally, for other projects, it's not really an issue because no one really cares that much to want to fork it in the first place.
Yeah.
Whereas owning the OS, that's big. Mm. If people could own it, they'd love to own it, I'm sure.
And it's not done Apache any harm, has it?
No.
As a project?
No.
It's arguably not done FreeBSD any harm.
That's true. But wasn't Apache forked-ish as Oracle something or other server? It wasn't really a fork, because Oracle weren't very good and they didn't really bother with it. But they basically took Apache and rebranded it.
Hmm.
Because they could.
Yeah, yeah.
Very easily.
I think if a company takes a BSD source code project and becomes bigger than the original project, then you've got a problem with the weight and the bias moving in favour of that company. But if you look at like FreeBSD, there have been lots of FreeBSD spin-off projects like desktop BSD and stuff. But it's in the interest of whoever's operating those projects to contribute their changes back so that the main central project succeeds.
I mean, apart from the early sort of lawsuit issues, why is it that BSD has lagged back so far compared to Linux?
Netcraft said BSD is dying, so yeah. I think it's been that for the last X number of years.
Other than licensing?
Yes. I mean, that's certainly back in the early 90s when there were the licensing problems with the FreeBSD, well, the BSD source code base. That did give the Linux kernel a kickstart. I mean, historically as well, FreeBSD has been a lot more conservative in integrating new features, whereas, you know, they describe Linux kernel development as Wild Western, where just anything can go in, you know, and then people try it out and test it and stuff.
Yeah, it's more evolutionary, really.
It is, yes. It's slower paced and more tested. So, you know, perhaps today that's the reason why FreeBSD is relatively small compared to Linux. I mean, it's not.
I think it's nice to have the choice. I like the position that the BSD license sits in. It's always nice to have that, and it gives companies the freedom to choose that if they want to.
I also quite like the DWTFYW license,
yes.
Which is do what the F you want. Work out what that is, and that is the only clause in it. It's just the clause is number zero. Do what the you want.
Hasn't he expanded it since then? into a long legalistic style thing.
which essentially says the same thing.
Same thing in longer words, yeah.
Some people have too much time on their hands, I think.
Or BeerWare as well, BeerWare license. If you use the software, you have to send me some beer.
I can't even believe the artistic license is still going.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's a bit messy. And I spoke to Michael Tierman last month, and he said, listen, it comes down to this. When I talk to someone else, they say, what license should I use? I say, use the GPL.
Mm-hmm.
Because for most people, that's the right answer. And for the few people that isn't, the answer's probably BSD.
Yeah, it's just a simple, I don't care, give me credit.
There's a small number, you say, okay, Apache. Mm. But it's pretty small.
You think so, yeah.
And then it's MIT, well, that's basically irrelevant, X11, whatever you want to call it. CDDL. Well, there are loads of them, you know, but it comes down to mostly GPL. I guess LGPL's got a place too, that's quite popular.
Yeah, so I think it's maybe the second most popular one, Fresh Meat, the LGPL license.
And then BSD. Well, you release your current, your GPL, aren't you?
GPL V2 for K album and later, yeah.
Yeah. But three. I don't really care about the patent stuff, but I feel obliged to use it anyway.
You see, yeah. If you'd released K album under a BSD license, a company could have taken it now and made it, you know, into a worldwide famous project. Apple might have bought it up.
Yeah, and I guess, even though that was never going to happen, you know, as the author of something, you want some degree of control. Ideally, I don't mind if people fork it and do whatever they want, as long as the kind of the effort, the initial effort, isn't lost, and if improvements are made, and the source code is back in the public domain, then those efforts haven't been lost.
So, if you found one of those like digital photo frames and found that it was running K-Album, a modified version, and they didn't give you the source code, the manufacturers didn't give you the source code, would you go ballistic on their asses?
Software Freedom Law Center, go!
Yeah.
Well, I have done in the past on several occasions.
Done what?
Yeah, there's small picture frames in Argos running K-Album using some of my transitions and thumbnail views.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. You said that very convincingly.
Yeah. If it ever happens, then...
The thing is, you know, I think we're already giving away an awful lot by saying, hey, here's all my work. Have it, sell it, rebrand it, redistribute it, change it, learn from it, do what you want with it, as long as you keep it free.
Yeah.
I think that's such a wonderful commitment to make in the first place. This is why I give away so much GPL code, because I think even if no one ever uses it, apart from finding it in a random Google search for some bit of code they can nick, that's fine. Take it. Learn from it. It'd be great.
Do you think there's more social responsibility in GPL licenses then than there is in the BSD?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You're saying I'm socially irresponsible?
Well, yeah, maybe I am. I've seen you on a Friday night in Bath.
Well, there is. With BSD, it's basically fire and forget. It's out there. Do what you like with it.
I don't care.
Stick my credit somewhere in your product.
Do right. I only chose it out of simplicity. I really just couldn't even bother. Well, you already got GPL.
You already got your credit in the name of the project, didn't you?
How <Yeah. laughs> very
just
narcissistic of me.
Just in case anybody forgets. Yeah. Who wrote this again? Might go.
But can you imagine what it might have been if it sounds silly, if BSD wasn't under a BSD license, if it was under the GPL license?
Mm-hmm.
We may now have OS X under a GPL license.
Or we might just have
large chunks of it, you know.
Yeah, Apple does seem particularly bad at pulling the covers over these projects. The BSD projects, they suck in.
Yeah.
And then they come out as web servers and kernels.
Yeah. And with that BSD KDE hating discussion all over, we come to the end of our podcast number 15. Don't forget to check.
Freeze! There's one last thing. Of course.
Of course.
Of course. Here's a question for you, continuing on the Linux trivia.
Oh!
One day you'll get one of these right. When you get them right, I'll stop.
Paul did get the last one right, didn't he? Yeah.
Well, the freaks kernel.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, it's Graham's turn now.
Graham.
Yeah.
Graham.
What was the first CPU architecture to which the Linux kernel was first ported? And there are two actual answers for this, so...
I'm going to have to cut out the thinking time.
Tick, tock, tick. Down,
down, down, down. Where's the squeaky tool you needed?
Was it the 68K?
That is one of...
Yes!
That is one of the two correct answers. The reason there are two is because the 68K, Motorola 68K port, and that's the chip used in the Amiga and Atari ST and Sun workstations, was the first actual port, but it was done as a separate project outside of the kernel source tree. The first actual official port, which was inside the main kernel tarball, was to the DEC Alpha chip, which is pretty old now, gone, I think. But congratulations. I'll have to think of something entirely different next time.
But slightly harder. We've got them both right now, Mike.
Right, okay.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, and with such awesome trivia, we come to the end of podcast number 15. Don't forget, all the notes for this podcast are on the website, where we post awesome news, features and more, tuxradar.com. And importantly, if you fancy subscribing to Linux Format Magazine, we ship worldwide. It's an awesome magazine. It keeps us off the streets. Go to tinyurl.com/podcastlxf. And we will see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye from Andrew.
Thank you.